content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return once again to the December 2021 edition of Our State magazine celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month is the joys of Christmas, toys we treasure. That is exactly the articles that we're going to be talking about today. The first one's entitled Under the Tree, Toys We Treasure, just like it says on the cover. Every generation knows the fizzy anticipation of waiting for Christmas morning and the lazy warmth of the day that follows. For some North Carolina kids, the joy of finding that Santa brought a hoped-for gift, a model train, a brand-new bicycle, a sled, sparks a lifelong passion. This is written by Susan Stafford Kelly. They talk of Christmas so long that it comes, the poet George Herbert wrote four centuries ago. And if you're a child, that's about how long it takes for Christmas morning to arrive. When that tummy buzz of anticipation, that sizzling, simmering bit of excitement that's been teased and tamped down and cautioned, have you been a good boy? Would Santa be happy about that? For weeks on end, finally erupts into full-blown delirium. Put another way, when the dark, still peaceful, silent night of Christmas Eve becomes, in a matter of hours, the complete chaos of Christmas morning. If you're reading this, or in your case, hearing it, you're probably past that giddy glee of scrambling from bed to see what Santa Claus brought. Past, oh, the childhood cruelty, having to wait at the top of the stairs or around the hall until an adult goes down, turns on the lights, turns on the Christmas music, lights the fire, starts the coffee, and calls out, "I think Santa came after all," releasing your bed-headed self to race for the living room or the fireplace or the Christmas tree. It's hard to know what to exclaim over first. The cookie with the neat half-moon bitten into its side, the half-full glass of milk left by a hurried Santa, the tracks across the rug left by Santa's snowy boots, or the presents wrapped and stacked, and admittedly have become a bit worse for wear from furtive prodding and poking and squeezing and peeking. The Christmas morning traditions began in childhood. Santa handing out the gifts one by one, cocoa and a peppermint stick stirrer and a Santa Claus mug, last far longer than any gift. Every Christmas morning, I laboriously squeeze fresh orange juice for everyone. Why? These days, fresh orange juice can be purchased at any grocery store. It's because my mother did, crushing orange halves in the tall, silver, long-handled juicer. For the same reason, knobby whole walnuts fill the toes of the stockings dangling from my mantle, because walnuts were in my stocking every Christmas when I was a child. Perhaps the very gift itself made Christmas more than a memory. The year my husband gave me a live Daphne shrub, complete with burlap-bound root ball. The Christmas after my son's college graduation, the one he still calls his old man Christmas, when his presents were all practical. A khaki raincoat of cast-iron skillet. When I was 10, the gift I saved for and ordered from the Miles Kimball catalog from my father an eraser the size of my forearm with "I never make big mistakes," mistakes being spelled incorrectly, printed on its rubbery pink surface. Everyone knows the delight of lifting the flap of a slender envelope with the oval cutout smack in the middle, framing a founding father's face on a crisp hidden bill. And every wise parent knows the value of a $2 gift that could be used instantly, a slinky, silly putty, never mind its two-hour shelf life. And don't forget the Christmas mornings remembered not by the gift, but by what happened, whether hilarious, happy, or sure, a little heartbreaking. The morning the tree fell over, the day the dog ate the earrings, a baby was born, it snowed, the first one away from home, the year my sister and I groggily stumbled and staggered round the tree because my mother had given us a sleeping pill when we went to bed to keep us in bed past 5 a.m. It's so compact, Christmas morning. A brief fleeting matter of mere hours when the Christmas morning scents, bacon and coffee and cinnamon and sugar, and Christmas morning sounds, the sizzle of frying sausage, the squeals of thrill, the crinkle and rip of wrapping paper, yield to later in the day scents and sounds. A roasting turkey, the fret of an overtired child, the dishwasher's churn. But why allow Christmas mornings to be dictated by the clock? Instead, let's define it by sensations. A certain lounging laziness, a bathrobe and slippers coziness, the comedy of bedlam, the calm of a fire's flames, the completeness of a creche when the Christ child can finally be placed in his manger cradle. The intimacy of mess, the warmth of hugs, the comfort of laughter and gratitude, the surprise of, well, surprises, whether in a box or in a face at the door. What do you get? And Christmas is recalled, has become a memory a day or a week or months later. The likelihood is that those feelings, those intangibles, will be stronger, have lasted longer than the books, the perfume, the boots, the trampoline. Okay, maybe not the trampoline. Capture the scents and sights and sounds, the blend of emotions so specific to Christmas morning that you'll have captured the essence of Christmas itself. Before the relatives arrive or the batteries expire or the shrieks subside, before the snow melts or the gift wrap is cleared, grasp it, grab it. Hold close the chaos or the calm, stow it in your heart where its flicker lingers like an afterglow, keeping the spirit of Christmas morning safe until another one rolls around. And now, model trains. Oh, little town of steam engines. For members of a model railroad club in Hendersonville, a love that started with a simple track beneath a Christmas tree now stretches across western North Carolina. Written by Jeremy B. Jones. The train from Asheville sets out with a long line of cars in its wake, nearly 400 feet and 700 tons of timber and coal and freight barreling southeast. It's sunny, but the weather shouldn't matter. If everything runs right, the train will pick up produce in Hendersonville before going down the mountain to Spartanburg, South Carolina. But this morning is especially busy, men coupling and uncoupling cars all across western North Carolina. Whistles ringing out through tunnels and around bends. If this engine out of Asheville expects to return safely, the conductor must sit up straight, keep his eyes peeled. But this conductor isn't where he should be. The cab is empty, the conductor's chair vacant. And still, train 802 rushes on. Only, this isn't real. Or it is real, but only sort of. The conductor of train 802 doesn't ride the rails, but stands an arm's length away, a remote in his hand, headphones on his ears, coffee in the air. He's inside an old train depot with a couple of dozen other men, nearly all of them retired and shuffling through the rooms in polo shirts, twisting knobs on handheld remotes. They're part of the Apple Valley Model Railroad Club, a 100-member-strong group that runs HO-scale model trains along the three-room display inside the Hendersonville Train Depot. Outside this building, it's 2021, but for these men inside on this Tuesday morning, it's 1950 and there's work to do. In the model train world, what's happening inside the nearly 120-year-old depot down on Maple Street this morning is called a prototypical operating session. For a few hours, the men operate the tiny trains and tiny tracks as if the displays before them were the real world. The tasks and engines, all shrunken versions from a typical day 70 years ago when the railroad industry was bustling. It takes two men to run Canton's paper mill. Another man serves as a dispatcher, watching the action in various boxes on a screen. The rest of the men carry detailed manifests and follow their trains room to room because the chest-high displays and rising mountain blocks what's just around the corner. They listen on the headphones for any changes or warnings and focus their attention on the radio-controlled engine pulling them from room to room and deeper into the past. The first train chugged into Hendersonville in 1879, climbing the steepest grade in the country from Saluda to get there. Once the train started coming, Hendersonville's small station was quickly overrun by new residents and campers and tourists. In 1902, a new station was built, and today that station is home to a miniature version of itself. But none of it, not the replica of the Hendersonville train depot nor the depot itself, should still be standing today. In the 1980s, Norfolk Southern slated the building for demolition. It had fallen to pieces in the nearly two decades since passenger service to Hendersonville ended, so there seemed nothing left to do but clear it away. But people rallied, filling up petitions and carrying signs. "Save the depot!" was the call of the day. The Parks and Recreation Department took the lead, collecting enough money and memories to save the structure. Then came the work of putting it back together. The model railroaders were there, swinging hammers alongside other volunteers and workers. Slowly, the station was brought back to life. In what once had been a baggage room, the club started work on a small display, sending power into tracks and constructing a miniature Hendersonville. People came to watch. Kids climbed on stools to see the trains. The city offered the club more and more space until eventually the men had stretched their trains across two-thirds of the revived building. It's tempting to say that model railroaders are simply grown-ups playing with toys. Layer on top of that, though, these prototypical sessions, which amount to playing pretend with paperwork, and you may as well be at a sleepover. But if you step inside the Hendersonville train depot and stand in front of any of the intricate and massive displays, it doesn't take long until you're imagining yourself inside that world, too. Like Dickens's Ghost or Dumbledore's Pensieve, something about the fully imagined scenes there pull you into them, into the past, until you're surrounded by pickup trucks and lumber yards and main streets. And then, as if out of nowhere, a train chugs through, injecting life into the otherwise frozen moment, and you're off. On a Wednesday or Saturday, when the Hendersonville Train Depot is free and open to the public, the timeless appeal of trains is undeniable. Children oohing and aahing, aloof teenagers smiling before they can think better of it, parents studying the tiny tools inside a hand-built sawmill. Just past a functioning telegraph in the original ticket office, the world trains begins. From the Hickory Depot, the displays travel west, raising up replicas of train stations, power plants, and feed and farm stores. Tunnels lead through the mountains and walls, and the tracks split along the way, sending the northwestern line to the upper level while the main line runs on to the Asheville Yard. The Apple Valley Model Railroad Club built all of this. During decades of work, the members have molded rocks and scratch-built depots. They studied photos and architecture drawings piece by piece. They've assembled an entire region inside a 1902 depot. It was one of the contributing factors to me wanting to move here, admits Larry Morton, the club's president. He recalls stepping into the museum when he first visited Hendersonville years ago and seeing 20 men at work on a display. Wow, he thought then, this is a must. It also helped that the first accent he heard when he walked inside was familiar to him. That guy was from Long Island, he said. The next guy he met was from Schenectady, another from Buffalo. He finally asked if there was anybody in the club from North Carolina. No, someone told him. But that guy over there has a southern accent. For those outsiders, model railroading has become a makeshift but robust local history course. Researching mining supply buildings and pulpwood mills, and then conducting trains to those miniature stops has steeped them in the stories of the places they now call home. What this means for you is that whether you've lived in Hendersonville since diapers or just passing by, when you happen through those depot doors one Saturday morning, you may find a New Yorker inside playing with trains, ready to teach you a little something about the world around you, about a past just out of reach. And he'll have a train ready to take you there. There are some sidebars here. It says all aboard, three spots to ride the rails. Because I'm a little short on time, I'm not going to read all the details, but I'll say the first one is Blowing Rock, Tweetsie Christmas, the Tweetsie Railroad, Bryson City, the Polar Express, and New Hill, Santa's Reindeer Roundup Express Trains. The next article under Toys We Treasured is entitled Skates, Holidays on Ice. Seeing a pocket of quiet in the mad dash leading up to Christmas, one family heads to Highlands and finds a rink they can skate away on. This is written by Drew Perry, who was a favorite of mine. We're in Highlands to escape the rush. That's what my older son calls the run-up to any major event. His birthday, our family beach vacation, though there's no rush like the Christmas rush. There is the fierce posting of the Christmas list to the fridge. There is the counting down via our aggressively lo-fi advent calendar. 24 tea candles on a cutting board. There is an ever-evolving negotiation related to belief systems centered on the North Pole. There's the frantic revising of those fridge lists. The shopping, the food, the pressure can get to be, well, it can get to the point where one might bail on all of one's other obligations and find a small spot to rent far, far from home. Bonus credit, it turns out, if that spot is near the downtown Highlands ice rink. There's something about packing the van in a last-minute way and heading west into near solstice sunshine that makes it feel like skating 4 hours from our home in Greensboro is the perfect answer to Christmas piling on all around us. We get hot chocolate first. The boys go back and forth about tricks they plan to execute. The air smells differently up here, and I find myself for a moment thinking about the passage of time, wondering how long the boys will still be little enough to need help lacing up their skates. But soon enough, I'm not wondering anything, because they're whipping ovals out on the ice, and it's something at least joy-adjacent, if not outright Christmas-level joyful, just to watch them go. We skate for 2 hours. They love it, because they love anything that involves going full out and then crashing into something. We get a pizza from Mountain Fresh Grocery and have a chilly picnic out on the green. And they love that, because they love anything that involves pizza. They're sad when we have to go, but we have to go. The sun's getting lower, and there's a hike I promised my little one we could try. And hear this, reader. The boys are not fighting. Nobody is asking how many days until Christmas. There's just a quiet car with rubber-legged boys who just skated 2 miles and are up for more. We'd seen the signs for it on the way into town, the Whiteside Mountain Trail, but unlike ice skating, have no idea what we're in for. We ask another family in the parking lot if we can make it up and back before sunset, and we get a hard maybe. Off we go, then, two fools and their dad up the side of a mountain. And there are icicles everywhere. It's an actual winter wonderland. In the steepest spots, there are stairs, and in some cases, the icicles curtain the mountainside behind the stairs in a very next year's Christmas card kind of way. The trail breaks out eventually onto a bald, and we're so high up and so exposed that both boys lie down on the rock to hold on. They don't need to hold on, I tell them when they ask, but they hold on anyhow. We make it halfway back down before sunset, finish in the gloaming, and in the purple light of the gravel parking lot, my younger son wants to know, can we go back? No, no, I tell him. Hiking in the dark is a sketchy proposition, even with the proper gear, and we don't have the proper gear. No, he says. Back to the ice skating. And though I feel the pull of a cabin we've rented, a fire, a glass of wine, a pot of soup in the stove that I need only reheat, a cast iron pan filled with cornbread. Well, here, let me send you this year's Christmas card. See the boys out on the ice again, laughing and whooping, carving into the corners and shooting back out again. See the fairy lights strung overhead now in the dark, or lit now in the dark. Edison bulbs burning on a simple string that make the rink and maybe this block of downtown Highlands seem like the only place in the world. Mine are not the only kids out here, not the only ones shouting, not the only ones who've forgotten every other impulse save glee. Let's put people in cozy coats, and let's pink the cheeks of those folks working hard out on the ice. Though it wasn't snowing when we were there, we can take some license and scatter a few flurries into the night sky. Ours is a family that views the holiday season broadly, letting it run from the Friday after Thanksgiving, the first day by rule, that it's all right to turn on the Christmas lights, through all 12 days of Christmas and sometimes a little beyond. Maybe this is why we have such an affinity for outdoor ice rinks. They arrive just when we're ready to start celebrating, and many of them are still waiting for us once we've put all our decorations away. They function something like a promise. They'll carry us through the rush and then give us something to hang on to once all the tinsel's been taken down. The shush of the skates on the ice reminds me of the broader season, the one we mark in our own way during the holidays, then carry with us into the quiet of true winter. But back to that card. Merry Christmas from the Highlands, or just Happy New Year! May you survive your own rushes, and no matter what you celebrate, may the season bring peace and joy to you and yours. May it also bring you a pair of rental skates, maybe even from somewhere fairly far away. If you'd like information about the town of Highlands Ice Rink, call their Parks and Recreation Department at 828-526-3555. Sidebar here. Glide around these outdoor rinks. In Blowing Rock, we have the Appalachian Ski Mountain. Overlooking the ski slopes on one side and the Blue Ridge Mountains on the other, this outdoor ice arena is fully lit for skating under the stars 7 nights a week. Warm up in between skate sessions at a rinkside bonfire. They're on Ski Mountain Road. They are email address. In Charlotte, U.S. National Whitewater Center, from mid-November through mid-February, the upper pond of the Whitewater Center is a grand 17,000-square-foot ice rink that includes an ice trail and a free skate area. Skaters can stop for a hot or cold beverage from the airstream in the center of the frozen pond. Whitewater Center Parkway. Greensboro has Piedmont Winterfest. Take an icy spin around the south end area of downtown. Before or after stepping onto the ice, stop for a beer, a meal, and a game or two at nearby South End Brewing or Boxcar Bar Plus Arcade. They're on Barnhart Street. Their email address is piedmontwinterfest.com. How about Scaly Mountain? That's Scaly Mountain Outdoor Center, a family-friendly outdoor center, a short drive west of Highlands. They offer ice skating, snow tubing, and rides on a 4,000-foot-tall mountain coaster. After the activities, enjoy a meal at Annie's Cafe or a sweet treat, fudge, candy, or ice cream from the on-site Bartram Market. They're at Diller Road, scalymountain.com. And finally, Sugar Mountain. That's Sugar Mountain Resort. If skiing isn't your style, the 10,000-square-foot ice skating rink at this resort can give you some fun outdoor entertainment. With a sports shop annex and the resort restaurant located nearby, hot chocolate and a hearty meal are steps away from Sugar Mountain Drive. SkiSugar.com/skating. And now, I mentioned some sidebars before, so I've got a couple of minutes here. I'm going to try to read those to you. And Blowing Rock tweets, "See Christmas, celebrate the holidays at this Wild West theme park. After a 20-minute open-air train ride through a display of Christmas lights aboard Tweetsie, visitors can enjoy homemade fudge, funnel cakes, and other goodies along Main Street. Guests can also meet Santa, watch a variety show, ride amusement park rides, and make s'mores at the outdoor fire pits." Tweetsie.com. Bryson City, the Polar Express. Experience Chris Van Allsburg's classic children's story by riding the mountains, the Great Smoky Mountain Railroad's Polar Express. Pajama-clad passengers can enjoy hot chocolate and cookies, plus visits from the conductor and a dancing chef on a roughly 75-minute round-trip ride to meet Santa at the North Pole. GSMR.com. New Hill has Santa's Reindeer Roundup Express Trains. The New Hope Valley Railway's Santa-themed train rides have been a holiday tradition for North Carolina families for decades. The trains, which are operated by the North Carolina Railway Museum, are part of the only historic operating railroad in the central and eastern parts of our state. During the 50-minute Santa's Reindeer Roundup Express train ride, visitors can search for Santa's reindeer, including Rudolph, of course. The train is one of the most popular events for the all-volunteer, nonprofit North Carolina Railway Museum. On Bonsall Road, TriangleTrain.com. Well, my friends, we have run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I certainly hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. And just as an aside, Carter Glass used to be a nationwide agent-owned company, and now he's independent. He can sell you lots of different kinds of insurance. And guess how I know that? Well, anyway, the content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org, or on iTunes. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.